You're listening to the DolphinsTalk.com Podcast Network.
Hello, 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 Miami Dolphin fans, and welcome to another episode of the Same Old Dolphin Show. My name is Aaron the Brain, and I am flying solo tonight on this venture. Josh was feeling a little bit tired, so I said, hey, get some rest. I'll take care of things today. And, so you've got yourself a little bit of a treat. If you love you some Aaron the Brain, because it's all me today. And today we're going to talk about the offensive line in our continuing series of big time decisions that the Miami Dolphins need to make on some big players this offseason. The previous 2 weeks we've done shows on Tua Tagovailoa, who obviously the Dolphins need to make a big decision on. As far as whether or not to extend him, let him play on the fifth year option, you know, whatever. And then obviously Christian Wilkins, that was the other big fish, as the Dolphins need to decide, can they come to a long-term agreement with him as far as a long-term contract? Are they going to franchise tag him? If they tag him, are they going to trade him? Are they just going to let him walk? And if you want to go back and listen to those episodes, you can, wherever you listen to your podcasts. Of course, you could always go on to DolphinsTalk.com, your one-stop shop for all things Miami Dolphins. Make sure that you're following the show at Same Old Dolphins. Make sure you're following me at Aaron the Brain. And make sure that you are following Josh at Amplified to Rock. Fully intended to just dive right in and talk about Robert Hunt and Connor Williams. But before we do that, we've got some other news, some other big news to attend to, and that is the Dolphins apparently making a decision on their defensive coordinator hire. Looks like they are going with Anthony Weaver, who most recently was the defensive line coach and assistant head coach for the Baltimore Ravens. So they went that route over a proven guy like Leslie Frazier, over a couple of in-house guys like Anthony Campanile and Ryan Slowick. So tell us in the chat what you're thinking about that. And, you know, I'm happy to entertain and kind of see where the rest of the fan base is on it. But I'll tell you where I'm at on it. I don't love it, but I don't hate it. I'm at the point right now where I think anybody that tells you that they know that this is a great hire, or anybody that tells you that they know this is a bad hire, probably just doesn't really know what they're talking about. Because the fact is that, you know, this, you know, Anthony Weaver is a very well regarded, very well respected coach. Hell, got a couple of head coach interviews in this coaching cycle with, I think it was the Atlanta Falcons and the Washington Redskins. And they decided to go other ways for whatever reason. And that doesn't mean that, and that's not really saying anything negative about Anthony Weaver. If anything, I think it's a positive that he's being looked at in that regard, that he's getting head coaching interviews at this point, considering that he was a defensive line coach and he's really only had 1 year as a defensive coordinator. Now, a lot of people are going to go and say, well, what did he do in that 1 year as a defensive coordinator? And I think it's very valid. It's the first thing I did was I said, all right, well, what is his coaching track record? And you go and you look and you see, well, he was a defensive line coach with Houston. And after the you-know-what hit the fan in Houston and things were falling apart, He became the defensive coordinator for one season there, replacing Romeo Crennel. And the defense was bad, but there was also, it was also bereft of talent. So it's hard to really say that it was his fault that the defense was bad when you really only had one good player. It was J.J. Watt, and it was J.J. Watt still playing at a relatively high level, but not at like peak J.J. Watt level. And then aside from that, it was just a complete dumpster fire, of talent around him on the defensive side of the football. And that team proceeded to go 4-12. The one thing I think you can take away from that, from his defensive coordinating stint with Houston, is sort of the coaching style. Because this is a guy who played under Rex Ryan and got his first coaching job under Rex Ryan. And when he took over as defensive coordinator for the Houston Texans, one thing that jumped out was the team's blitz rate defensively went from average to below, or to below average, to like a top 10 blitz rate in the league. And I think when you look at, you know, him being in Houston that year and then going to Baltimore and the types of defenses that Baltimore has run over the past couple of years since he's been there. Granted, he has not been the defensive play caller. He has not been the defensive coordinator, but it is a defense that skews more aggressive. And so I think if you read between the lines or read the tea leaves, and you want to sort of come up with an educated guess as to how this defense under Anthony Weaver may differ from the defense that the Dolphins played under Vic Fangio, is I think you can expect that the Dolphins are going to blitz more. I think it's going to be an aggressive defense. I don't know if this means they're going to go back to a lot of man defense or if they're going to play a lot of coverage, you know, whether it's going to be cover three or cover six or matchup. I don't know. And I don't think anybody really knows. And, you know, the only people that know that are probably Mike McDaniel and Chris Greer, because they were in the building interviewing him. But I think when the announcement was made that this is the route that they were going, the first thing I thought of wasn't really about Anthony Weaver. It was about the guy that they, the two guys that they chose him over. It was Leslie Frazier and Anthony Campanile, who I think most would agree were probably the two favorites when the names were first announced about a week ago. And, you know, my first thought went to Anthony Campanile, and I thought to myself, well, this tells us what the Dolphins think of Anthony Campanile. This tells us that the Dolphins think that Anthony Campanile is a fine position coach. But if they were absolutely over the moon with Anthony Campanile and they were sold that this guy was going to be a great coordinator, he would be your defensive coordinator. And he's not. And that tells me, one, he's probably going to be gone. He's probably going to take a job somewhere else. He may get a DC coordinator, a defensive coordinator position somewhere else. He may take a parallel move just to get out of the organization, because I think from a personal standpoint, a professional standpoint, if you're trying to grow in your career and climb the ladder, the Dolphins have basically told you this is as high as you're going. So if you're Anthony Campanile, I don't know how you know, if you have any aspirations of becoming a defensive coordinator or higher, I don't know how you stick around here. So, I think that's probably the end of the Anthony Campanile era here in Miami. But I think that Anthony Weaver, look, he's a young coach. He's going to identify with players. He's got a great reputation around the league from anybody that's worked with him. I think it's going to be, you know, I think there's a lot of reasons to like the hire, but I think there's a lot of unknowns. And that's where you think of the other guy that they chose him over in Leslie Frazier, and that Leslie Frazier, there was a known entity there, that this guy has been a quality defensive coordinator in this league for a long time. He's been a head coach. And there was going to be this sense that if you brought him in to be the defensive coordinator, that you at least felt, all right, I feel good. We've got somebody with a track record who knows what they're doing there. And I think it makes it easier for us to have kind of this clear delineation like we did last year of Vic Fangio runs the defense. So it would have been Leslie Frazier runs the defense. And then Mike McDaniel runs the offensive side of the ball. The fact that they did not go that route, I think, one, kudos for them for thinking big and swinging for the fences. But also, I wonder how much of it is they just wanted to bring in somebody that wasn't going to have the gravitas to just say, I've got this long track record. I know what I'm doing. I'm going to do things my way, and I need you to bring in the players that fit my system. Because it seems like that's what they had in Fangio, and to a certain extent, they sort of placated him, and then not so much, and then it became a situation that had a lot of friction. Whereas it seems like they took a hire this way, where this was somebody that was going to come in and was going to run the defense the way that they felt the defense should be run, and was not going to feel like he needed to have say over personnel. Granted, this is all assumption because I have no idea what they talked about in that interview, and I'm sure we're not going to hear any of that so long as Anthony Weaver is still here. But that's kind of just how I feel about it. That's you know, the first place my mind went. So as far as whether or not it's a good hire, I think we'll see. I think it's an ambitious hire, in the same way that Mike McDaniel is an ambitious hire. A lot of people were like, you know, when the Dolphins hired Mike McDaniel was, well, you got a team that you're putting in a win now mode to try to go for a Super Bowl. How are you going to bring in a head coach that hasn't even been a play caller? Well, now you're bringing in a defensive coordinator who has only had 1 year as a defensive play caller. And it was, 4 years ago on a really bad defense. So I think anybody that wants to question that, I think that's fair as well. So I think you could see the positive in this. You could see the negative in it. At the end of the day, we're going to have to wait and see how it plays out, the type of defense they run, the players that they bring back. And we'll just have to make our judgment from there. But that's all I'm going to say about the defensive coordinator hire, because I'm ready to get into the offensive line. But before we get into the offensive line, we've got a new sponsor that I've got to tell you a little bit about, and that is Lucy. Lucy is upping the nicotine pouch game with Breakers. Pouches packing a little something extra inside. So what are Lucy Breakers? If you know your pouches, you know that the nicotine doesn't hit immediately, and neither does the flavor. The geniuses at Lucy came up with a brilliant way to fix both these problems. They put a mini liquid capsule inside each Breakers pouch, and here's what you do. You grab a Breakers pouch, you break the capsule with your teeth, it makes a really satisfying pop, and then you put it in your lip, you enjoy the immediate nicotine and flavor relief. Nobody is doing anything like this except for Lucy. It's a new kind of pouch technology, and it's only available from Lucy. That's L-U-C-Y. No more sandpaper pouches drying out your mouth. No more weak flavors that don't last. Breakers are different. It's 4 or 8 milligrams of tobacco-free, 100% pure nicotine coming in 6 delicious flavors. Unique ones like apple ice or espresso, and classics like mint or mango. So break up your dusty gas station pouches and go to lucy.co. That's lucy.co. And use promo code DolphinsTalk to get 20% off your first order. Lucy offers free shipping and has a 30-day refund policy if you change your mind. That's lucy.co. lucy.co, and use the code DolphinsTalk to get 20% off and always free shipping. And here comes the fine print. Lucy products are only for adults of legal age, and every order is age verified. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. So I want to get into the offensive line. The much maligned Miami Dolphins offensive line throughout, it seems like it's been 20 years of our Dolphins fandom. Certainly over the last, I would say, decade, it's been a bugaboo. Certainly in the Chris Greer era. And here's the thing. The Dolphins offensive line got a lot of credit for taking a big step this year. And I think that was well deserved when it came to running the football. The Dolphins finishing as the number three rush offense in the league and putting up some really gaudy rushing totals, particularly early in the season. And, you know, they also were, I think, statistically ended up being the number one offense in the league from a yards per game perspective. And, you know, Tua was sacked very few times. So people said, well, you know, the offensive line did a pretty good job. But as you got towards the end of the season and you played really good defenses down the stretch and you look deeper into the numbers, what you see is that, one, when it came to the passing offense, the Dolphins, you know, the reason why Tua was sacked so few times is because they made a concerted effort to get the ball out of his hands in a record time of less than 2.5 seconds per dropback. But he was also, while he had, you know, arguably the, you know, one of the fewest pressure rates of any quarterback in the league, the time that it took opposing defenses to get that pressure was extremely high, which points again to the fact that this is not a great pass protecting offensive line. And further, this was an offense that struggled to run the ball down the stretch against better defenses. And so many people have said, coming out of the way this season fell apart, that the offensive line is still primarily what is wrong with the offense. Now, I'm of the belief, and I've always been of this belief, and I've said, if you've listened to this show for years, you've probably heard me say this at least half a dozen times. There are two ways to have a truly elite offense in the NFL. One way is to have an elite quarterback, and another way is to have an elite offensive line. At times, it may have appeared that the Dolphins had an elite quarterback. At this point, I can safely say, and I think most of us can safely say, the Dolphins do not have an elite quarterback. Tua, no matter what you feel about him, you may feel like he's a very good quarterback. You may feel like he's a pretty good quarterback. You may think that he's an average quarterback. Hell, you might even be one of those people that thinks that Tua sucks. At the end of the day, the one thing that I don't think anybody's going to argue is that Tua is not an elite quarterback that is going to carry this team regardless of what his offensive line does. And I think this year is the proof of that. That what we did was we proved that Tua can play at a very high level when protected, but with this offensive line's limitations, there's a certain ceiling of what Tua can do. So you better beef up that offensive line to, one, have a better running game that you can lean on down the stretch, and two, have an offensive line that can protect for more than 2.5 seconds so that when you play the best defenses in the league and they make you hold on to the ball for more than 2.5 seconds, it's not a complete disaster like it was coming down the stretch this season, particularly in that game against Kansas City. So that takes us to Connor Williams and Robert Hunt, the Dolphins starting center and starting right guard this past season. And we knew we were going to have to double up at some point in this series on players. And I think what's more fitting than doing these two together in one show, because they, you know, both not just offensive linemen, but interior offensive linemen. And so the first question that you have to ask, and, you know, I kind of brought this up last year, and somebody, casual Dolphin in the chat, brings up a good comment when he says, that's the majority of QBs in the league. And yeah, that's my point, is that that's the majority of QBs in the league that need to have a really good offensive line in order to play at a really high level, because there's maybe four or five quarterbacks in the league that are truly, you know, offensive line proof. And they're not really offensive line proof, but they could probably carry. And you're talking about your Patrick Mahomes, your Josh Allen, your Lamar Jackson, probably Joe Burrow, and the things that CJ Stroud did in his rookie year. I think he projects to maybe be that guy. And who knows, maybe Jordan Love, but I'm not ready to put him there yet. I'm not even sure I'm ready to put CJ Stroud in that stratosphere yet. But anyway, that's kind of my point on, you know, Tua and why you need to build this offensive line, because at the end of the day, Tua is not going to carry you if you do not give him a dominant offensive line. So how good are Connor Williams and Robert Hunt? Are they franchise pillars that you need to build around? And if they are, what's it going to take to keep them? And if they are not, what does it look like if you move off of them? And can the Dolphins afford to sign either of them or both of them? And I'm going to kind of start with, I'm going to work backwards on that, because as far as whether or not they can afford to sign both of them, I think it really greatly depends. It greatly depends on what they do with the guys that we talked about in the last 2 weeks, Tua Tagovailoa and Christian Wilkins. Because a lot has been made about the Dolphins cap situation, being that they're like $51 million over the cap as we sit right now before the league year. Here's the thing. The Dolphins can get to almost $28 million under the cap just by making these moves that I believe are no-brainer moves. And I think if you're listening, you'll probably agree. If you don't agree, let us know. Tweet at me. Put it in the comments. They can restructure Tyreek Hill, which saves them about $12.5 million. They can restructure Jalen Ramsey, saves a little over $18 million. You restructure Bradley Chubb again, that saves you over $14 million. You restructure Zach Sealer, that saves you about $4.7 million. You're going to release Emmanuel Ogba now that it's going to give you over $13 million in cap savings. And you're going to release Jerome Baker, which is going to save you almost $10 million in the cap as well. Just by making those moves. Oh, and then you'll also release, saving about $3 million apiece, Jeff Wilson and Keon Crossan. I think we can all agree those moves, the guys that you're getting rid of and then the restructuring of those contracts, those are guys that are going to be here. There's no problem with restructuring those deals and making any of those moves. They're kind of no-brainer moves when you consider that you go from, just by doing that, you go from $51 million over the cap to having nearly $28 million in cap space. If you then extend Tua Tagovailoa, and I know that that's, you know, controversial at this point, and we don't know that that's the route that they're going to go. But if they do, you can easily take his cap number, which is scheduled to be a little over $23 million, and you're probably, depends on the way you structure that contract and how much money it is and how much guaranteed it is, you're probably going to bring that cap number down to probably around 8 or 9, maybe $10 million. So you're probably saving somewhere around $13 to $15 million there. So that right there is putting you on the low end, right around $40 million in cap space. And that's before we even talk about signing Christian Wilkins, post-June 1st cuts and, you know, a possible post-June 1st cut in Xavien Howard. We're going to put that one off, because you can't even touch that money until after June 1st anyway. So we're going to keep, for the purposes of this exercise, we're going to keep Xavien Howard on the roster. And just with those moves, you're already at $28 million. And if they were to extend Tua, you can easily get to $40 million. So if you do that, And then you give a contract extension to Christian Wilkins. And obviously we don't know what that's going to look like. And that's not a foregone conclusion either. But if you do that, let's say that you give Christian Wilkins roughly the Quinnen Williams contract, right? Well, the Quinnen Williams contract signed last season, the first year of his contract, cap hit of $6.4 million. Just to show you that that's not an aberration, why don't we look at Jeffrey Simmons, another guy that's kind of in that same class. First year of his cap, or his first year of his contract cap hit, $6.35 million. How about Dexter Lawrence? Dexter Lawrence, $5.7 million in his first year as far as cap. So you could put yourself in a position where you extend Tua and you give a contract, a long-term deal to Christian Wilkins, and you're still working on like $35 million in cap space, $34, $35 million in cap space. So yes, if the Dolphins wanted to, they can totally get deals done for Robert Hunt and Connor Williams. And if you want to know what those deals would look like, well, let's take a look. Let's take a look at high-paid guards in the league. How about Ben Powers? Signed his contract last year. 4 years, $51.5 million. That's probably right around the range that you could probably expect Robert Hunt to get paid. First year of his cap, $5.25 million. Let's go to another guy that signed fairly recently. I don't think he's going to get Joe Tooney money, but hell, let's say he did get Joe Tooney money. Joe Tooney signed for 5 years, $80 million. First year of his cap, $4.5 million. So this idea that somehow these guys are too expensive, and that you could only, if you sign Tua and Christian Wilkins, you can't afford to bring these guys back. No, you absolutely can. Let's take a look at centers. How about Corey Linsley? Signed a 5-year, $62.5 million deal a few years ago. First year cap hit, $6.6 million. Ryan Kelly. Well, Ryan Kelly's a little bit of an outlier because the Colts had a bunch of cap space, so they front-loaded his deal. So his deal is a little bit different, but you can go to like Eric McCoy, who signed a 5-year, $60 million deal in 2022, first year of his cap, $3.2 million. So, I mean, even if you go sort of on the high end, as far as what it would cost in the short term, and I understand that, yeah, if you backload a bunch of deals, eventually at some point, you're going to need to, you know, that cap number is going to go way up. But again, the point of this offseason is to lock your players up. You lock your players up that are franchise pillars that you need to not just win this year, but to win in this entire winning window. And by doing so, then you can do what the Dolphins have done last year, what they're likely going to do this year, and you restructure those contracts and you make it fit. But you need to have these players under contract before you can get to that point. Because if you don't, then you've got to replace them with somebody. And I find it hard to believe that you're going to get better players than Connor Williams and Robert Hunt, at least over the next couple of years, by letting them go. Granted, there is a case to be made for, well, you could draft guys. This is a big draft that's coming up. And it's, you know, I'm not a big draft guy, but a lot of people have made the, you know, a lot of experts have gone out there and said that there's about 10 to 15 offensive linemen with first round grades in this draft. So this is a great draft to need an offensive lineman, whether it's a tackle, a guard, or a center. They're all there. And the Dolphins at 21, if they decide to keep that pick, will likely have an opportunity to draft a very good offensive lineman and likely to have their choice of having a really good tackle, a really good guard, or a really good center. But here's the thing. Do you know how many games Connor Williams and Robert Hunt this season, how many games the Dolphins played where both of those guys played? The answer is 6 games. And that's important, not just because, and I'm going to go over these 6 games, but it's important to note that these guys aren't Teron Armstead. These guys aren't guys that had a track record of missing a bunch of games. Connor Williams, the 3 years previous, did not miss a single game. Robert Hunt, the 3 years previous, well, 2 years previous, did not miss a single game. 2020 is rookie year. He played in all 16 games. He started 11. He was kind of worked in slowly in that season as like their third tackle. And then they moved him to guard the following year. But the point is that these guys do not have a track record of getting injured. And it just so happens that they got injured this year. And so when you think about, well, okay, they played in 6 games this year. What were the 6 games that both of those guys played in? Well, they played in the game, they both played in the first 3 games, the Chargers, the Patriots, the Broncos. They both played in the game against the Giants. And then they didn't both play in a game again until the Black Friday game against the Jets. And then they played in the game against the Commanders. In those 6 games, the Dolphins scored 240 points. They averaged 40 points a game when Robert Hunt and Connor Williams both played. Now, granted, there's the outlier of the Denver game. So let's take the Denver game out. That's still 5 games and 170 points. That's still 34 points per game. So there's no doubt that the Miami Dolphins offense played really, really well when both of these guys were out there, and it wasn't in spite of them. Connor Williams, at the time that he got injured, was rated the number one center in the league by Pro Football Focus. And you could take positional grades with a grain of salt. But at the end of the day, if they're calling him the number one center in football, what's the floor there? Top 10? Top 5? The bottom line is, Connor Williams is a really good player. And Robert Hunt, well, going into this season, Pro Football Focus had him as the number 17 guard going into the season. And by most accounts, Robert Hunt was actually playing at a higher level this season than he was in any season previous before he got hurt. So I tell you, these guys aren't just really good players that the Dolphins, that would be nice if they could keep them. These are players that the Miami Dolphins, if at all possible, should absolutely be trying to keep. And then as far as that whole draft conversation, well, here's the thing. If you keep both of these guys, you can still draft an offensive lineman at 21. You could draft a tackle. We don't know what Teron Armstead is going to do, if he's going to play, if he's not going to play. But either way, you probably want to have somebody lined up that could play left tackle. Even if you're planning on Teron Armstead coming back and Kendall Lamb being your swing tackle again, if Teron Armstead's talking about retiring this year, you're probably going to want to, you may not get more than this year out of Teron Armstead. So you better plan on having the heir apparent there. So you may do that. Or what about this? What about drafting another guard and playing, and then moving Liam Eichenberg, who is easily your worst offensive lineman. And granted, Liam Eichenberg, you know, really commendable effort to do what he did this season, filling in the gaps for this Dolphins offense and this Dolphins offensive line. But at the end of the day, Liam Eikenberg is Liam Eikenberg. And he's, if he's any better than your fifth best offensive lineman, then you got a real, real problem. And so what you can do is you can draft a guard and move Liam Eikenberg to the bench. Heck, you could even draft a center and you can move Connor Williams back to guard, where he had plenty of experience playing before he came to Miami. And then all of a sudden, your interior offensive lineman is either the guard or center that you drafted, Connor Williams and Robert Hunt. And then you still have Austin Jackson at right tackle. And then you might have Teron Armstead at left tackle or Kendall Lamb or whatever. But now at that point, you feel like you've taken your offensive line, which was a little bit of a question mark, and you've really further invested into making it a strength. And at the end of the day, if you're going to do that, you still got to hit on the pick. That's been the tough part about this. And it's easy for everybody to say, the Dolphins need to draft an offensive lineman. The Dolphins need to draft an offensive lineman. Been there, done that. You got to draft the right offensive lineman. So that becomes the challenge. But the point is that this can absolutely be done, and it can be done affordably. Where this gets tricky is if you do not extend Tua or come to a contract, a long-term contract agreement with Connor Williams. I mean, with Christian Wilkins. Because then, if you're talking about Tua playing the fifth-year option, that scenario of having $40 million of cap space all of a sudden goes down to $17 million. And now you need to make cost-cutting measures. And even if you sign, or even if you extend Tua, if you franchise tag Christian Wilkins, and then you have to wait until you come up with a deal to trade him, well, that's $21 million on the books, roughly. Somewhere between 19 to 20, whether they give him 19 to 21, whether they give him the non-exclusive tag, which allows them to negotiate, but then, you know, whatever team that negotiates has to give them two first round picks, or you give them the franchise tag, just the traditional franchise tag, the exclusive one. But then you say, we're going to grant you permission to go, you know, explore a trade. And, you know, basically anybody that trades for him knows they're going to need to give him a contract extension. So it's just kind of understood. And so you're going to go one of those two routes if you end up franchising him, because then all of a sudden you've got, you know, a $21 million cap number, and that $40 million number is all of a sudden goes down to 19. So that's why we put Tua and Christian Wilkins first in this series, because what the Dolphins decide to do with those two guys will set up, those are the two dominoes that absolutely have to fall before they make any of these decisions. In my opinion, this team sort of rushed into their winning window, but we're here now. And now the idea is to try to extend that. You don't extend your winning window by getting rid of your best players, especially when you can afford to keep them. And so, for me, the goal is the best players that you have that you need to make decisions on, you need to do everything in your power to keep, and then you trim the fat elsewhere. I'm not trimming the fat on the offensive linemen, not on these two offensive linemen anyway. So I am absolutely advocating for signing these guys. But at the end of the day, you know, it's not cut and dry, because it is dependent on what happens with Tua and what happens with Christian Wilkins. And if Tua and his agent are like, well, we want to get the bag, and we want to get, you know, the massive 5-year deal that comes out to like annual average salary of $50 million, then, you know, I'm not a proponent of giving Tua that deal. And if that means that we have to play him on the fifth year option, well, then that at that point, that becomes the prudent move that you have to make. And if you make that move, well, then now that probably impacts what you're going to do with, you know, your ability to sign both Connor Williams and Robert Hunt. But in a perfect world, if the Dolphins can figure out the Tua extension and they can figure out the Christian Wilkins contract, they absolutely can have reasonable cap numbers on those guys and have the money to lock up these two stud offensive linemen. And then we can figure out, because I mean, realistically, you could very easily, with that scenario, sign those two guys and still have about somewhere between $25 to $28 million in cap space before we're even talking about, you know, Andrew Van Ginkle and whether or not to re-sign him and Deshaun Elliott, or whether or not we want to go out and spend money on the actual, you know, free agent market and bring in some free agents from other teams. You can do that if you extend to and you give the contract extension to Wilkins, and you can still get it done with Connor Williams and Robert Hunt. So that's where my head is at. That's what I would like to see this team do. And, you know, if you don't think if you think I'm crazy, let me know in the comments. If you think that I'm a genius, let me know in the comments. They don't call me Aaron the Brain for nothing, whether it's tongue in cheek or not. But at any rate, I think that pretty much covers it. So the next show that we're going to do is going to be next Monday. And Josh will more than likely be on that. I hope. I'm already losing my voice just from doing one of these shows. And we're going to be talking. I was thinking that we would do Xavien Howard, but I think we're going to do Andrew Van Ginkle first. Cause I know Josh feels really strongly in his stance on the Van Ginkle. And I think it's interesting, especially considering the injuries to both Chubb and Jalen Phillips. So we are going to do the Andrew Van Ginkle show next week. But I'd love to hear what you guys think of this show. You know, I put in a fair amount of work. I've been definitely thinking, this is the part that I really love, the season, the regular season, and typically the postseason either involves the Dolphins or, you know, either doesn't involve the Dolphins or involves the Dolphins very, very briefly and is always very disappointing. And the regular season is always just kind of felt like waiting to get to the postseason, which always, you know, either way, it's going to end in disappointment. So this is what we have as Dolphin fans. This is the exciting part of the season, is figuring out what the Dolphins will do, figuring, you know, coming up with your opinion and formulating what the Dolphins should do. This is what gets me juiced up. I know it's nerdy, but I love it. And frankly, if you've stuck around for 45 minutes of a podcast at this point, God bless you. You're nerdy too. And I love you for it. So for Josh, who hopefully will be back next week, for the entire DolphinsTalk.com podcast network, I am Aaron the Brain. And take care of yourselves and each other. And as always, go Dolphins!